Compassion Plans, Episode 13, Saving the Future Through Education, with Sean Scott from GetSchoolBored.com.
This is Tim Lawson from the One Too Many Project. You're listening to Compassion Plans with Bentley Davis. Let's make the world better together.
The world we live in is far from perfect. How can I effectively make a difference? This is Compassion Plans, a weekly interview to help you make the world a better place with your host, Bentley Davis.
This is Bentley Davis, and I would really like to hear what you think of this show. If you would do me a big favor and just send a quick email to bentley@compassionplans.com, tell me what you like about the show, tell me where we can improve, tell me how we can help you help others. Once again, that's bentley@compassionplans.com. And today I have Sean Scott from GetSchoolBored.com. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you very much.
I'd like starting off the conversation by talking about compassion, which is usually reducing someone else's pain. So, Sean, what pain are you trying to reduce?
The thing that I'm most passionate about in life is really figuring out how I can use my skills to help other people. And I think that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. I have a very technical background. I have lots of other interests as well. So it's really just a matter for me of figuring out what it is that I can contribute to other people's lives. You know, hopefully make their life a little bit easier and a little bit more enjoyable.
So yeah, so you're kind of in that seeking stage, kind of like I am, and finding out what's the most effective use of your time and skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what have you tried so far to explore that?
Well, I've done a lot of different things. Currently, I'm doing a lot of stuff with technology. I started a group a couple of weeks ago. It's called the Urban Hack Academy here in Dallas. And what we do is we teach kids from about 12 to 18. We teach them coding skills. I've actually been a coder since I was about 7, which was seems like forever ago. And I guess in a lot of ways, it really was. It was almost 30 years ago. Given your background, I know you know how different the technology world has been over the last 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really been the one thing I've always really, really wanted to do from the time I was that young until now. And luckily that, you know, I couldn't have predicted what it was going to turn into back then. It was really just a lot of just playing around the computer and, you know, playing the few text-based games that we had back then and, you know, way to kill time. And, you know, it just so worked out that by the time I got to college, the internet was kind of like the new thing and we had email and, you know, all that stuff happened. And it's really blown up since then. So I guess, you know, I guess it was a good plan that really worked out well for me. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, that kind of started way back then have gone on to do some pretty amazing things to create the current industry.
Yeah, definitely. So what language are you teaching these students?
We're starting with teaching them Ruby on Rails.
Mm-hmm.
For the last week, we've been going for 2 weeks, and we actually haven't done a whole lot of programming type work. The thing that I challenged them to do was the first week, I went around the room, just kind of asked everybody to introduce themselves, what grade they were in, what school they were at. And then I asked, what do they like to do in their spare time, and what was their favorite app? So everybody, you know, that kind of broke the ice with everyone because when we first got there, nobody really wanted to talk. It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Nobody really wants to be in a class that time of morning, and adults included. But as we went around and everybody, you know, said their first statement, you could see people starting to laugh. A lot of the kids were into Instagram. A couple of them were into Vine. So there's a lot of similarities among the kids. And then after that, I told them to take a few minutes to think about if there was an app out there that they could create, what would that app be? And I really challenged them to throw out, you know, their lack of knowledge in anything like that, because we could fix that.
Right.
But if there was the one thing that they wanted to build, what would they want to build? And it was amazing because, you know, like I said, these kids range from 12 to 18. So they're the first generation in our society that has always had computers in their lives.
Yeah.
But imagine being 18 years old, and this is the first time someone's really taken the reins off and said, what would you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
Besides using a computer as a consumption device. So that really, you know, got a lot of them thinking. And I wanted to make sure that I got everybody's individual answer. And then after that, you know, a lot of the ideas were actually pretty similar. We started to combine into groups, and we ended up with like four groups the first week. And then this past weekend, we actually had about 10 new kids show up. So we went through the whole exercise again. And it was really, you know, it was just really amazing, because this was the first time someone has ever asked them that question. If you could create something, what would you create? For me, I think it's somewhat tragic that we're letting kids get to 18 and no one's ever asking that question.
Right. No challenges. No.
Yeah. I mean, it's just they're going through the motions, but no one's ever asking them, what are they really interested in? We're telling them what they should be interested in. Mm-hmm. And then we punish them when that's not really what they're into. So that's why I think we get kids that decide, oh, I don't really like math because I'm not good at it, or I don't like to read. But the problem becomes we've never let them read something they wanted to read. Mm-hmm. We try to force, you know, what we like on them. And if that doesn't work out, then we label them a bad student.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit I hated reading when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Cause it just always seemed like a huge chore. And a lot of the stuff that we had to read in school, even up through high school, and really part of even early college, I just was not interested in it. But one thing that my mom did when I was a kid was in the summertime, we spent a lot of time at the library. And I don't know if you remember these books, but they were kind of like science fiction a little bit. But as you went through the book, you got to a point where you could choose the direction the story would go into.
Yeah, the choose your own adventure books.
Yeah. And so I was really into those. And so if she took me to the library, a lot of times I would get four or five of those types of books. But once again, those weren't the same kind of books I was reading in school.
Right.
So the thing I've learned is we really have to find a way to connect kids to what they're really interested in. And if you do that, all those stuff will eventually work itself out. They'll learn how to read. They'll learn math. But we have to reach them at their own level. And if you have a class of 30 kids, you're going to have probably, you know, a lot of different levels in that class. And I think that's where, you know, we're missing kids, because we're trying to make them all learn everything the same way instead of really trying to figure out how can we personalize this and reach them where they're at.
For these students that you're teaching, would you consider them underprivileged, or, you know, or are these just kind of your standard run-the-mill kids?
It's hard to say, because I don't really know them on a personal level.
Yeah. So you're not focusing on any certain demographic or anything, right?
No.
Now.
And you know, when we organized a class, we opened it up to anybody who wanted to come. You know, we didn't include race. Only consideration we had was age. Okay. Because we didn't want to get kids that were too young and couldn't stay focused over a 5-hour period.
Right.
And that would kind of add an extra layer of distraction that we really didn't want, especially the first time out the gate. Mm-hmm. And we may find a way to incorporate them into the program later on, and maybe, you know, shorter time periods or something like that. But beyond that, we didn't have any restrictions on it.
That's still a pretty wide age range.
It is. And what's been interesting is that even the 12-year-olds have been able to keep up with the 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it's really just, like I said, giving them something, letting them do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's pretty amazing to sit back and watch, you know, them all feeding off of each other.
Yeah. So when you split up the groups, you didn't necessarily separate them by the age. It was more interest.
Yeah. It was all about interest. And you know, before we combined people in the teams, you know, I would explain, because they didn't have the exact same idea, but I could see where the two ideas would work mm-hmm. together.
Right.
And I would kind of explain that to them, and they're like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. So that's how we were able to work it out. And I think now we're up to 20 kids in the class, and we still have four or five groups. One group might have three or four people in it, and I think the largest group might have six or seven.
Have you noticed whether the older kids kind of take a little bit more of a lead or a mentorship role yet, or are they all just kind of interacting strictly as peers?
It's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any of the older kids just totally take over.
Yeah.
Which is good. With some of the issues that, you know, the things that we talk about, you definitely tell they have more knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, this comes from a, I guess, a maturity thing. possibly just being older and just, you know, more life experience.
Yeah.
But the thing, you know, thing I've really tried to stress is make sure that everybody in the group is involved. So every time we have them get up and throughout the day, we probably have them present like 5 or 6 times about what the group is working on for an exercise. And I really try to make sure that a different person participates every time so that everybody in the group is at least paying attention. And they, if they're not contributing on every exercise, at least you know what's going on. And that's actually worked out really well. A lot of them are still shy, which is to be expected. But when it's their turn to speak, you know, they all have something to say.
Yeah, that's great, giving them an opportunity to speak in groups and work in groups, which I think they're trying to do more in school these days. But the speaking is really something that a lot of us didn't have experience with till we hit the business world.
Yeah.
So when you were putting this together, did it take a lot to set up, or were you able to just post something on Craigslist, or how did you get it all started to find the kids and get the kind of a curriculum of any sort together?
How it originally started was a friend of mine, his name is Kevin Mundy. He runs a nonprofit here in Dallas called Project Still I Rise. And they've been around for a number of years, and they've really taught kids robotics and engineering skills.
Mm-hmm.
So actually my nephew, earlier this summer, they had a camp out at UT Dallas, and he was part of the camp. And that's how I found out about their whole program. And a few weeks later, Kevin put out a post on Facebook saying he was looking for somebody to come in and teach coding skills to kids. I contacted him and said I definitely would be interested, because that was something that I was actually trying to figure out how I could do. We just happened to meet up and it all worked out. It really didn't take a whole lot of preparation. I will say the first week, I actually intentionally didn't spend a lot of time preparing for it because I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, for me, it was really important to figure out what it was that they wanted to do and what it was that they wanted to learn, as opposed to me saying, okay, kids, I'm going to teach you all Java over the course of this class, even if it may not be the most appropriate thing for what they were wanting to do. So, you know, I made a general outline of the topics that we wanted to discuss, and we kind of just took it from there. Another interesting thing that happened is towards the second part of our class, the first week, we started kind of going over terminology. So I asked them if they knew what WWW stood for.
Hmm.
A couple of them did, but most of them didn't.
Yeah.
I asked them if they knew what HTTP stood for. Nobody knew.
Yeah.
I asked them if they knew what SSL was. Nobody knew. Or FTP. And I just threw out a bunch of terms. And so we went over them, wrote them all down, and they were all like, oh, I never knew that, but I use it all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, once again, it was just like this, I don't know, interesting moment where the light came on. And once again, it was like they've never been challenged to find out what any of that stuff meant. They just took it for granted. And, you know, then I made a diagram of like how the internet works. And I asked them, does anybody know, like, if you type in google.com on your computer, what happens behind the scenes to bring you to that website? Of course, nobody knew that either.
Yeah.
Two kids that have been doing this for 12 to 18 years and never really even thought about, like, how does this stuff work, you know, that I use all the time.
They seemed truly engaged. It didn't seem like they were just sitting through another class in school, right?
No, and I think that was the most amazing thing about it all was that throughout all everything that we did, even when it, you know, became, you know, after lunch and everybody's full and you know how we get.
Oh, yeah.
You start getting sleepy and all of that. But they still stayed engaged until there was time to go. And then even after, you know, we let them loose, there was a couple of us that still stuck around. They were talking and everything. So I think they all really had a really good time. You know, that's the reason they all came back the second week. And, you know, and I think the more even interesting thing the second week is we actually got more females involved in the class.
Oh, good.
That was unexpected because I didn't know more kids were coming. I really wanted to stress with them, like, the importance of that diversity. Because if you have a room full of men, and this is something the technology industry really needs to figure out, a room full of men only has a certain amount of experience about life. And most of them are going to be the same. So adding the female dynamic, you get a whole different set of ideas and experiences just from the fact of them being female.
Right.
And so, you know, I challenged, you know, the girls to make sure that, you know, they weren't shy. Because the boys definitely have dominant personalities in our group.
Yeah.
To make sure that they felt included in their group and they were, you know, giving their ideas. And it took a little warming up for them as well. But after about 2 hours or so, they were, you know, you wouldn't have thought they had missed a beat.
That's great. What is your male-female ratio right now? Do you know? Just approximately.
It's probably 60-40.
60 male, 40 female.
Yeah. Well, out of the 20, I'd say it may be like 12 boys and 8 girls or somewhere along there. I didn't actually count. But there's quite a few.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's a lot closer than the national average for computer programmers and scientists and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard stats showing that girls are usually interested in science and computers and electronics until about the age of 12 or 13. And then in the United States, at least, there's this big kind of switch off where they almost don't want to look smarter than the boys in the class. So, but it sounds like your girls have been involved and you're able to encourage an equal kind of dynamic there.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see. And, you know, like I said, I really wanted to make sure that everybody in the group was involved and everybody was being included. Because at first I could kind of see, well, one of the groups where it was a lot of guys, and I think there's 2 girls in that group, the guys were kind of running away with things. And I really try to stress to them to make sure that they include the girls' input. And so, you know, as long as I'm telling them that and making them aware that, okay, you might be ignoring them a little bit. So, you know, tone it back a little bit and listen to them. And I only had to say it like once or twice, and then the issue fixed itself.
Wow, that's really good.
One issue that, you know, one thing that I did find interesting is there's one female in our class. She's 14 and she's a pilot.
Hmm.
And she says she's been flying planes for about 2 years now.
An airplane pilot. Yeah.
Yes. Like she can take off, fly around and land a plane all on her own.
Wow.
At 14. And when she told me that, like she was there the first week and she told me that, I was like speechless. Because, like, I've never heard of that happening before, especially for a 14-year-old female.
Yeah.
And so that was her thing that, you know, she said she was interested in. And she said, you know, she doesn't really use the internet a whole lot. She didn't have a favorite app, but she's into flying and she likes, you know, music. So, and she plays a couple of different instruments. You know, that's just really interesting to hear, the stuff that these kids are into, because I would have never guessed that we would have had a pilot in our group. But that's something I couldn't even do. So, I mean, that just totally blew me away.
So what inspired you to kind of get started with these in the kind of education space and helping these kids out?
Well, I guess it's kind of been a long time coming for me. I come from a family of educators. Both my grandparents were teachers. My mom was a teacher and my sister is currently a teacher. So I guess that's always kind of been a thing that I've been into. But the flip side of that is, working in IT and being a software developer and a network engineer, I've always thought about the money side of things as well. Everyone knows that there's definitely a bigger upside financially working in IT than as a teacher.
Right.
So really, probably over the last 2 years or so, I've really started to see, like, how could I combine the two things where I'm not necessarily in a classroom, but I can still have that impact. The first thing I did was I went to work for a local nonprofit. And we worked on parent engagement. And so what we did was we work in a number of schools around the area. We teach a parenting engagement class once a week for a number of weeks. And every week it's a different topic. It was covering things like setting goals for kids. And we worked at the elementary, middle, and high school level. So the lessons were kind of geared towards whatever level of school we were at. And we had classes in English and in Spanish. And that really kind of opened my eyes to see, you know, from a parent's perspective, the things that they were dealing with. Because I know what I go through with my son.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see, you know, just the bigger picture. And especially talking to a lot of the Spanish-speaking parents. Because a lot of them, you know, weren't raised in this country.
Yeah.
And so that process of getting them acclimated to our education system is very interesting. And you see why they struggle sometimes, because I've dealt with parents that only speak Spanish and then they go to a school to enroll their kid. And there's one person in the entire school that speaks Spanish and that person may not always be available.
Right.
So then what do you do as a parent? it's frustrating. And so you also think about, you know, what's your child's experience going to be if no one at this school speaks his language?
Yeah.
And you're wondering about your kids struggling and how they're going to acclimate and if they're going to get bullied and just all the things that you hear about that happen in our school systems. That put a different spin on things because it just really made it personal. And I started to see why we have some of the issues that we have in education, because there's so many things that we just simply don't address. Here in Dallas, the school system is over 90% Hispanic and African American.
Mm-hmm.
But largely, we don't treat it as such when we're trying to figure out school policy and how we're going to address the kids. We take the, you know, vanilla approach that every other school district in the country uses, but we really don't single out to say, well, if we have, and it's actually like 70% Hispanic. If we have 70% Hispanic kids in our school district, what does that mean? It happens at schools where there's, you know, an Hispanic person in the administration. So if you have a Hispanic principal, there's probably going to be a lot of Hispanic staff members. But at a school where that's not the case, what happens to those students? Because they're still there. And sometimes they kind of get left by the wayside because everything is geared towards, you know, the traditional English speaking, I came from America crowd. We have definitely a growing population of kids that aren't from here.
Yeah, and it's even hard to tell the cultural differences that they're expecting from a school.
Mm-hmm.
What type of interaction they had in their home country? Was that an expectation? Was school kind of a babysitting? Do they even have homework? You know, and that's something you have to keep, you know, kind of on your kids to make sure they complete. So yeah, that's an interesting challenge. I was thinking, because yeah, my son just graduated high school from Carrollton Farmers Branch, which is a suburb of Dallas, which is many of the schools he was in was 60% Hispanic. So I kind of just assumed that they had the language issue kind of handled.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I mean, when you say 60% Hispanic, though, you know, some 50% of those kids are second generation. They're not first or something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it sounds like I didn't even have an idea that we weren't doing a good job of acclimating those new, you know, I'm just throwing numbers out there, but, you know, probably 10%. I mean, there's been a huge influx of the Hispanic community in this area. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we're one of the largest growing areas around. But to make sure that they have the opportunity to acclimate and become functioning members of society is an important goal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting challenge that I hadn't really thought of.
Yeah, I just think it's really up to all of us to figure out, regardless of a person's legal status or whatever that may be, mm-hmm. if they're here, how do we address their needs? And how do we find a way, at the very basic level, just to treat them as a human being,
right?
And figure out what are their issues? Because then the other thing we have to consider is everybody brings something to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So while they may not speak the same language as us, they can contribute to our society.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how we can help them do that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that a lot of people who think about this and maybe even criticize how we treat people or, you know, who say that we should have a stronger stance or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they may not be focusing on that these people being here is impacting our society. And if we do not facilitate fulfilling their needs, because as you said, that's causing a tension that we're going to have to live with and deal with. You know, any of the solutions that people say for this issue, all of them have challenges. There's no simple solution for this, besides even the humanitarian and the compassionate things, because they are human beings. There's a net benefit of our life and who we live here in providing, you know, making sure that those people that are here are acclimated.
Mm-hmm.
And acclimate is probably a bad word, but you know that their needs are being fulfilled. It's cost effective for everyone. It's something that's under heavy debate these days.
Most definitely, especially at this state.
So this passion of yours isn't a full-time career or anything. This is something you do mostly on the side?
Well, from this aspect of it, this is pretty much a side time thing. My full-time career is actually now creating education software that hopefully it starts to merge some of these two things together. So I can look at some of the issues that I see communication issues or resource issues and figure out how we can address some of that stuff with technology.
So how far are you on that path?
I'm pretty much really just getting started. So I went to this hackathon back in July. It's called Yes We Code Youth Hackathon. And I was there as a mentor to help the kids. Basically did the same thing that we're doing in my class, but we had a weekend to do it. Help them with their development skills and whatnot. So we all came up with app ideas. And so the idea for my group was an app that helps kids and parents and teachers get on the same page as far as homework is concerned. And so we were looking at, because as a parent, I have a 10-year-old son. He lives with his mom, but when I do talk to him during the week and I say, "What's your homework?" I always get the shrug of the shoulders.
Right.
Or he tells me, "Oh, I have just this one or two things to do," but really he had three or four things to do.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I don't know that when he comes home. Then I find out the next day when he goes to school, gets the stuff, turns everything in, and he brings his progress report back home. I see he didn't turn something in, or he had more work than what he originally told me that he had. So it's a frustrating cycle that has existed, I'm sure, since homework was first invented.
Right.
Because I know I used to do the same thing with my parents when I was, in school. Mm-hmm. And so that was my real pain point to figure out how could we overcome that. And so that's what we looked at doing, was putting together an app that would inform parents every day of all the homework that their child had to do across all their classes. And we, figured out how we can make sure that it was something that, for one, didn't add an extra burden to the teacher.
Yeah, definitely.
Something that the parents would actually use on a consistent basis. And then something that, from a student's perspective, something that they could be incentivized to actually participate in. So we looked at, various ways of doing that. And so that's something I'm still kind of continuing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because my son has graduated already. But back in middle school, they were starting to try and implement some of these kind of homework. Well, it wasn't just homework. It was all grades tracking system. But they had a portion in there for homework. But the turnaround time on it and the teacher being able to keep up with it, which, our teachers are overburdened these days. That's just flat fact, right? Underpaid, overburdened. I was frustrated with it because my son had this issue where in the middle of the school year, he would flat out just stop doing homework.
Yeah.
Good kid. He just had problems with the follow through. And for a young, impressionable mind, your speed between the time they make a mistake and the time that you bring it to their attention, the shorter that time, the more effective the learning from that mistake happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very frustrating to me that I wouldn't find out, we were tracking his grades through the system, but still we would end up where it was a month later and he was so far behind then that, he's talking about doing a month's worth of work, and even if he did it then, he's still going to get zeros for it.
Yeah.
So what did my son learn is that if you ignore something long enough, the issue goes away.
Yep.
And that wasn't a fault of the teachers. That wasn't a fault of the schools. I asked him when he gets home, but we still only, I can't meet with the teacher every day. If every parent met with every teacher every other day, they would have even less time than they have today.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a very challenging issue, and to do it in a way that and doesn't cost too much for these underfunded schools will be an interesting challenge.
It's definitely a lot to it because, after we came back from the hackathon, I really started to think about, kind of the bigger implications here. Because homework, sometimes it's actually, we've gotten to the point where now it's not even being graded. Some places don't even, like my nephew, for example, his school doesn't assign homework. And so for them, homework is not necessarily a big deal. But I think there's still an underlying thing of what you were just saying about reducing the time from when a problem arises to when you find out about it.
Yeah.
Because the one problem that I have not seen anyone address is if the first time you find out about how your kid is doing in a school is when his report card comes out, it's too late.
Yeah. 6 weeks or something.
So, yeah. So whatever that is, 6 weeks, 9 weeks. So 6 weeks went by that if your kid was struggling in week two, something could have been done to address that.
Right.
But, through some of the stuff that we have now, we just don't have enough tools to really identify, the kid that's struggling in week two.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the other things I'm really trying to look at and figure out is how do we identify, you know, those problems from the moment they start to occur. And it also goes beyond just, you know, you got a bad grade, but looking at what skills are being tested by that assignment. Because like my sister's a teacher and her son is going into eighth grade. And she sat down with him at the beginning of the summer just kind of to see where he was at. And she came to find out that he really didn't understand multiplying decimals. Mm. So think about if you have a test that, you know, is evaluating five or six different skills, but consistently you're missing the questions about multiplying decimals.
Yeah.
So you could technically get a 90 on every assignment, but every time it's one about multiplying decimals, you get that one wrong. How do we find that out? And so I think we have to go beyond just looking at just a numerical grade, because there's a lot more stuff there that no one is really, to my knowledge, I don't see that anyone's ever really delved into all that. So, you know, it's definitely a lot of data that we're going to have to look into and collect and gather and analyze, and really figure out what at the core is it that kids need help with? Because it's not good enough just to say I'm a bad math student. But
right.
What part of math are you just not understanding? Because if you don't get this stuff in fifth grade, you're not going to get it when you get to eighth and ninth grade.
Right.
But if we can identify this stuff back in fifth grade, then we can address it. And hopefully by the time you get up to the point where it really becomes serious, you're back where you need to be, as opposed to just pushing you along because you were good enough at everything else, that it all averaged itself out.
Yeah, they could have a gap in their knowledge that just going to come up and bite them later.
Yep. I mean, and there's lots of issues, I think, that, you know, that happen in school that we don't address. You know, one thing I like to see is look at, you know, how what they eat for school lunch might affect their behavior. Talking to my mom, she said, you know, back in the 80s and probably the early 90s, there were some studies done on it, but they kind of got dropped because we got so focused on standardized testing.
Right.
But imagine if you have a kid that shows behavior problems throughout the year, and you can say that he typically has these problems on days that we serve pizza for lunch. Well, maybe we don't just serve him pizza anymore. And I don't know that there's a strong correlation there, but I would like to at least explore to see if there is, or see if certain kids do better on days when the temperature is above a certain level than others.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just think we really have to get away from labeling kids as being bad kids or bad students.
Right.
Because that doesn't serve anybody. And really figure out what are the things that are affecting them that can, you know, that we can address and change for them and help get them to where they should be. Because every kid, you know, deserves a quality education, because that's what's going to get them through the rest of their life. So we're doing all that through school board.
So are you hoping that to be a startup that, and would it be profit or nonprofit?
It'll definitely be profit. Just because, you know, I think, you know, I really have a real passion for technology and technology companies, but I definitely have a passion for education. Because the thing I always stress when I talk to kids is that one day I'm going to depend on them to be my doctor.
Right.
Or my car mechanic or whatever it is that I need. They're going to have to be the ones that do that stuff.
Right.
And I want to make sure that I poured enough into them at this point so that when they get to that point, they're prepared for it. I don't want to be driving down the freeway and my wheel falls off because you didn't know how tight to tighten my lug nuts. And it scares me because I see kids that don't have a lot of life skills that are, you know, about to go into the real world. And I just wonder, or I hope that, you know, at some point they can get caught up to where they should be. But when they don't, it's sad because, you know, we all know life doesn't get any easier than before you're like 25. After that, you start getting real responsibilities, and you have kids, and you have a family, and you don't have the opportunity to go back to school full-time like you could have when you were fresh out of high school or whatever it may be. So it just gets more complicated. And so it really gets harder to catch up. And, you know, I think we're also starting to see that the future of, like, work in this country is going to be vastly different for them, where a lot of, you know, warehouse jobs, customer service jobs, some of our, you know, lower paying wages, they're pretty much unskilled positions. They're just flat out not going to exist anymore.
Yeah, I was actually watching a video talking about how, you know, when the automated cards come out in the next 10 years, computers are just going to be better at it than humans. So transportation is a quarter of our country. For most of it, it's a fairly simple job. Yeah, a lot of those long-haul truck drivers are, you know, short-term, those jobs are all going away. So yeah, that's one less thing that you're going to be able to do if you don't have, I'd like to say quality education, although, you know, nowadays college is not necessarily a requirement for many of these jobs, but a quality education nonetheless.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter to a large extent where that education comes from, but you're definitely going to have a good amount of skills to get you through life. And you're going to be at a huge disadvantage if you're the person that really doesn't know how to do much of anything. I think that's why, you know, STEM education is so important, because even if you don't necessarily become a computer programmer, the thing that programming teaches you is how to solve problems and how to think about things in a critical way, so that if you do have a large problem, you can break it down into smaller problems and solve those. Back when I was in college, I learned how to fix on cars because I didn't have the money to go to a mechanic. And I had been building computers my whole life, so I figured if I can build a computer, which is just a bunch of parts, our car is technically the same thing, just a different, you know, format. So I got a few books and, you know, a few cut knuckles and scars later, you know, I was able to change my starter and my alternator and things like that. Recently, I put new brakes on my car. So those are the kind of skills that you learn from STEM, I think. I'm not necessarily going to become a mechanic tomorrow, but if push came to shove, that's an avenue I could possibly go down. And so that's a door that's somewhat open to me because I'm familiar with how cars are put together. And I think that's the thing that we really have to stress, because you want to have as many options in life as you possibly can. And feel free to, you know, if this industry collapses and no one's hiring in technology for a couple of years, well, you can go work in this other industry and make a living for yourself. And so the technology industry comes back, or you may decide that, hey, this other industry that you want to work in, you like that a little bit better.
If you're starting up school board, if you don't mind getting into a little bit about how you're finding the time and the energy to do that, are you getting investment?
Currently, we're still working on that. The good thing is that I have a few partners that are helping me along the process, so I'm not having to do everything by myself. And that definitely, I can't say, speak enough about how important it is, if you're starting anything, is to get other people on board with you. I think there's a sense of, you know, accomplishment that you get from doing things yourself. But eventually you realize the point you can't do it all by yourself. And you really just don't even want to, because once again, you're robbing yourself of the diversity that groups bring. And everything, you know, when you're doing everything by yourself, you're thinking about it from your perspective, whereas other people have other opinions. And ultimately, I think you just become more successful that way.
So you have a regular full-time job somewhere, and then you're going to be trying to transition to school board at some point?
Well, I still do consulting. I still build websites and stuff for companies. So that's, you know, that's where my income is coming from at this point.
Okay.
And when I'm not working on that, I'm working on building up school board.
And the great thing about consulting is that you can kind of curve how much work you have depending on how much work you want to work on this long-term project. Because I'm in the exact same position. So I haven't been consulting for the last 2 months, but I just got a gig in October for part-time for 3 months, and that'll help fund the next stint of working on, you know, whatever I'm going to do to save the world.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's interesting because you're always juggling all these different themes. But I think that when you're doing the right thing, all that stuff just works itself out. There's never been a time where I was homeless at any point in all of this. Or, you know, I've eaten every day and my son is eating every day. You know, and there's stuff. There's definitely things I've had to cut back on, but my basic necessities are taken care of. So as long as that's good, then I'm ultimately okay.
How'd you go about kind of finding mentors or people to work with you on this?
I guess I've just been really lucky because I've lived all over the country. Anytime I get on Facebook or anything and put out a post about something I'm working on, I always have people that are like, "How can I help?" So I have a pretty diverse group of friends, and I'm constantly meeting new people all the time. So I think, you know, you go out and, you know, if you don't necessarily know the people right now, you go find events in your area. And if you tell people what you're working on, I've never been anywhere and told someone, hey, I'm working on this idea. And there's like, oh, that's horrible. Get away from me. They're like, how can I help? I know this person over here. I can recommend you talk to them. I can set up this meeting for you. And it's all, that's just always been my experience. At some point, you know, that's not going to always be the way it works. But for the most part, I think people are willing to help you however they can when they see you doing something positive.
So what are two things that we could do to help you out, either with, you know, school board or any other project?
Well, I would say if you want to help with school board, go to our site, which actually redirects to Facebook right now. It's just goodschoolboard.com. There's an email sign up link on there. Sign up and let us know. What we're going to do with that is let everybody know when we're able to launch this product. It should probably be out the next month or two. And so we just really want to, you know, build as much traction, get as many people excited about it as we can. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and just let us know what your experiences are with education. Because I want to see what people's pain points are and make sure that I'm addressing those types of things. And it may not be through our initial product. It may be something we release in a year from now. But ultimately, you know, that's what we're looking to do, is figure out how we can make education something that people are proud of and people enjoy. As far as with the kids, I would say just contact me personally if you have any types of technical skill sets. Or, you know, if you would like to volunteer, if you're in the Dallas area, I always invite people to come out to our classes. We take a little bit of time every week to have another person just kind of speak about their experience in the workforce, any, give any type of advice they can to the kids. So, yeah, if anyone's interested in volunteering with us, I'd be more than willing to have help.
What's the best way to contact you?
Either on Facebook, it's just facebook.com/Sean.Scott, all spelled out, or Sean.Scott on Twitter. That's probably where I spend the most of my time, and I'm pretty accessible on either one of those sites.
Well, Sean, I appreciate how you're working towards our children's future, which, of course, will be our future, and all the time you're spending on that. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your compassion with us.
Well, I definitely appreciate you having me.
And thank you so much for listening. Get the links and notes for today's show at compassionplans.com/13. Never miss an episode by entering your email into our subscription list while you're there. If you appreciate what we're doing, go to compassionplans.com/appreciate to find out how you can spread compassion by rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for caring.